The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. We ran out of episodes because there was no Thursday night show, Thursday night recap. So we're doing a Saturday night recap. That's right, an extra show with three Saturday games on. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Excited to talk with the super friends, Ryan Wilson, John Breach, Sean Wagner McGough. Sean, I got to say, buddy, three straight days of watching Star Wars. You look exhausted.
First of all, only 2 days of watching Star Wars. I did see, however, the movie twice in a span of roughly 12 hours. So I went Thursday night, and then I went Friday morning.
Oh, so you didn't go Saturday morning?
No, because I wasn't going to go Thursday night, and I was going to go Friday morning and Saturday morning. And then I just could not even, like, log on to the internet or Twitter because people were, like, adding me fake spoilers, and it was just really annoying, and I was worried
were they?
Yeah, a lot of people were, like, adding me. I mean, obviously fake spoilers, but still trying to mess with me. And so I went 2 days without checking my mentions, period, which actually, I mean, this shows I'm addicted to Twitter. Harder than you would think to, like, go on Twitter for work purposes but not be able to check when you're getting notifications. So I ended up going Thursday night because I couldn't hold off any longer.
You guys probably don't know this because you don't listen to the Fantasy Podcast with Heath Cummings. But I started the show off by telling everyone who listens to the podcast to send Sean fake spoilers all day, Thursday and Friday.
And we also spent 20 minutes on this podcast telling people to do that, while also saying that we're all going to text spoilers to Sean, which I forgot because I didn't pay my phone bill and my texting wasn't working.
See, so, I was worried a little bit about Breacher or Brinson maybe seeing it and texting me. So then I was like, Thursday, I got to go.
So instead of sending spoilers, I was sending Sean naked pictures of Baby Yoda, and I don't know what he did with them. So,
you don't actually think I would go out of my way to go see a brand new movie and then
100% you would do something like that without question?
No, I wouldn't do that to Sean with Star Wars. That'd be horrible and cruel.
I have another question. So, Sean, you're 26 or 27?
27.
That was his question. That was it.
My follow up question is. You're the future Mrs. Sean Wagner McGuffin. What if she hates Star Wars?
Ooh. I mean, that's fine.
But, like, she's going to leave her for, like, two straight days to go on a Star Wars bender the next time it comes out, and she's going to be like, this is my future husband, this weirdo wearing a Yoda mask.
First of all,
counterpoint, the current Mrs. Brinson hates football, and here we are. So.
Well, and what if the new Mrs. Wagner McGuff also demands that you add another hyphen and her last name to your last name so that you have three last names?
And hey. Her last name is Wagner. Sean Wagner McGuff Wagner.
It's like the story of, like, how Madison Bumgarner used to date someone named Madison Bumgarner.
Wait, I like Mrs. Sean Wagner.
You don't know about that story?
Madison Bumgarner used to date somebody named who?
Madison Bumgarner.
You sure?
Yeah.
From way back in the day? I mean, I guess, I mean, he's from, like, a small ass town near Hickory, North Carolina. That wouldn't be surprising. Yeah, you got a bunch of Bumgarners. Madison's a girl and a guy's name. That kind of makes sense. Checks out. Who hadn't dated their cousin if you live in North Carolina? Who amongst us hasn't dated their cousin?
He's like, quote, no relation. I'm sure of it. He did.
Anyway, let's talk some football. Good start to the show, though. Keeping it short, tight. I like it. Let's dive right in with the San Francisco 49ers.
A heartfelt victory for the 49ers. C.J. Beathard lost. Peter Schrager of Fox Sports reported, NFL Network reported after the game that Kyle Shanahan gave an inspiring, family-oriented speech. C.J. Beathard, the backup quarterback, lost his brother in a tragic accident in Nashville. And the 49ers won 34-31 in a game that eliminated the Rams from the playoffs, a game that set up the 49ers and the Seahawks for a Week 17 matchup that will determine the division winner. Even if the Seahawks lose to Arizona, they would still win the division if they beat San Francisco because of the head-to-head tiebreaker. And a game, I think, Sean, that raised a lot of questions about Jimmy Garoppolo's status. 16 of 27, 248 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. A kind of a clutch game, but not a very impressive game.
Yeah, this was for most of this game, this was the Garoppolo that we were concerned about up until like the past month, when he actually played pretty well against a good stretch of opponents. But you mentioned it. I think the one redeeming quality is that look at what he did on the final two drives. So he had the 6-play 81-yard drive with the 49ers trailing in that game, and they took the lead. So a lot of that was George Kittle on a 36-yard catch. That most of it was Yak, 23 yards. But if you go look at that touchdown pass outside the pocket, that was an impressive throw and a good play by him. And then you look at the final drive. It's funny because the final drive is kind of a microcosm of this game where he converts two third and 16s, which gets the 49ers into field goal range. But the only reason they were in those third and 16s is because he took really bad sacks, and he was sacked, I believe, six times. And some of that is on the offensive line, but some of it was he just looked lost in the pocket and didn't really understand when to get rid of it. So an uneven performance, but, I mean, at this stage in the season, no one cares if it's uneven if you convert those two third and 16s, which he did.
And Sean just mentioned those last two drives. He was on fire. Like, we can say Garoppolo got the yak there, but Jimmy threw two strikes. He threw a strike to him. He threw two strikes on those third and 16s. And I don't know how Emmanuel Sanders got that wide open on that 46-yard catch except the game-winning field goal. But again, Garoppolo threw another strike. If he would have flubbed any one of those throws, then the 49ers aren't in the position to win that game. And over the final two possessions, we're talking about when Jimmy showed a little bit of clutchness because he was doo-doo the entire game leading up to those possessions. Last two possessions, he went 6 of 8 for 134 yards and a touchdown. Every other possession combined in that game, he only threw for 114 yards. So he threw for more yards in those last two possessions than he did in the whole game combined.
Peter Schrager tweeted out after the game that the 49ers hadn't converted a single third and 15-plus all season. And he just mentioned, Sean, that Jimmy G did it twice on that drive. What's his name? Taylor Rapp, the rookie safety from Washington. I don't know what he was doing on that bomb to Manny Sanders in the middle of the field.
Who, by the way, has been having an awesome year. Like, he's been a big year addition for them. Yeah.
And the reason he slipped to the second round is because he ran like a 4.7 or something at his pro day, because people loved him sort of once the college season was over last year and he was injured. I don't think he participated in the combine. No matter. I don't know what kind of coverage he was playing on that drive where Jalen Ramsey looked like he was going to beat him over the head with Manny Sanders' leg. He was pretty bummed out about that. And that pretty much sealed the deal at the end of the game. Earlier in the game, and a much bigger mistake, I would say, is Jared Goff throwing the ball straight to – who was that in the flat that he threw the ball straight to?
Fred Warner.
Fred Warner. Oh, my God.
Linebacker, BYU, second round.
Come join the Warner brothers and the Warner sister dot. Is the Warner brothers.
The thing about that interception, not that Jared Goff threw it because we've seen him throw dumb interceptions. That was probably one of the worst. But when he made his way back to the sidelines – that's about as upset as I've seen Sean McVay in almost 3 years. His eyes are about to bug out of his face. You look like he wanted to slap Jared Goff in the face with his helmet off. Did you feel that way too, John?
Well, I was just going to say the ironic thing there is that, like, if anything, maybe Goff should have wanted to slap McVay in the helmet. Because if your whole game plan is throwing screens and short passes, like, the defense is going to pick up on it. The Rams didn't try and change that. They're a good defense. They're a smart defense. Eventually, somebody's going to read it right, like Fred Warner did, and make a play. We saw at least three other passes that got batted down at the line of scrimmage in similar situations, and any of those could have been taken to the house. So it's just a matter of
– the only thing I would say, John, is that Fred Warner was standing right there in front of the receiver. Like, Jameis Winston doesn't even throw that ball.
Yeah, no, they were bad, bad throws, but I'm saying that Sean McVay is playing with fire also. It's on both of them.
Yeah.
Like, it was a horrible throw by Goff, but McVay's playing with fire.
I do think, though, part of the reason why that was the game plan is because he is kind of working with a limited quarterback. Like, it was very clear from the onset.
Wait. They just gave him all that money, Sean. He's not. That's not a limiter.
None of us and all of us thought you're being sarcastic. Okay.
No, but I mean, Sean McVay and Les Snead thought it was a good idea.
I mean, I do think though that like that is sort of the point, which is like if I mean, there's such it encapsulates the Rams perfectly that they had to that was all that McVay had left was this one scripted drive early. And then a bunch of screens and a bunch of bootlegs and a bunch of play action. And if that stuff didn't work, I mean, the 49ers were all over them. And by the way, at the end of the first half, you want to talk about, I mean, like that pick six, the Rams intercepted Jimmy Garoppolo on, San Francisco's, or on Los Angeles's 25 as they're going in, right? And the Rams get it. It's a huge stop. You pick them off there. They then go four plays, produce nothing. Intentional grounding is called and they miss a field goal. Excuse me. It was on San Francisco's 25. They miss a field goal. They end up giving it back to him on the 42. They basically gave up 17 yards of field position. And so like the whole thing was botched. You toss in the pick six and they were up 21-10 with 5 minutes remaining in that game in the first half. And they went to the half down 24-21. That's the game right there. That's it. It's over. I mean, that's how you lose that football game. That's how you get eliminated from the playoffs. And those sort of limitations that the Rams have had on their quarterback and the offense all year long are just basically what doomed them. They couldn't beat a good defense all year.
And it's telling that I actually thought tonight's performance or Saturday night's performance by them was actually one of their better showings. And like, I don't think they were bad offensively over the course of the entire game. Like Goff obviously had that terrible interception. You just mentioned how they failed to cash in on that turnover. But it's telling that like this is their ceiling this year, where it feels like last year this would have been just like, I want to say closer to their floor or like at least just an ordinary game by them. But this felt like when they came out, it's like, oh my God, where's this Rams offense been? But this is the Rams offense we saw in every single game, even when they weren't that good over the last 2 years. So I think that's what was telling about it. And I actually think McVay's game plan actually worked to a degree. Like it's very clear when you have a banged up offensive line or just a not elite offensive line, you have to get Jared Goff outside the pocket, and on the move. And I thought in that regard, it worked, but Breach is also right. At a certain point, it's you can't go play action, boot, screen, and that can't just be your offense because the defense will key in on that eventually.
Yeah, you're not playing Pop Warner guys. You're playing NFL guys, and they keep seeing the same thing. They're going to pick up on it.
Well, well just on the pick six, like he threw that without looking. Like he didn't look to see if there was a defender coming, and Fred Warner read it the entire way.
You could tell. Right as he was releasing it, he was like, he realized like what he was doing, but he like couldn't stop it. Like, cause you're right. He was just like, oh, my safety valve's there. Gonna throw, oh, right when he releases it, he realizes.
Well, I think maybe it was Eric Edholm pointed out, but it was like, you could tell that he like held the safety and then dumps at like the last second. And like Fred Warner was like, wait. Ah, I gotcha. And he just went to the house. It reminded me a little bit of the, strip sack six against Phillip Rivers by the Vikings last week where.
Which one?
The one right before halftime, where it just changed the tenor of the game. Like you felt like the Rams were kind of controlling it. That there's a good chance the Rams might win, and ultimately they did have a shot to win. I mean, they
were up when Cooper Kupp caught the touchdown in what was that? In the third quarter? I mean,
right? But I mean, like the 7 points is a pretty big swing. Is all I'm saying.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then not covering Manny Sanders in the last play there, that didn't help either.
Yeah, I mean, like, should that be a red flag, the fact that they gave up 2 3rd and 16s on the final drive for the Jalen Ramsey trade? I mean, I know it was Taylor Rapp's fault, but like, if you can't stop 2 3rd and 16s for Jimmy Garoppolo on the final drive when it's a tie ball game, there's like, they're probably willing to punt. I don't know. What do we do? Like, the Rams called timeout on the second one. They didn't have to call timeout. They could have let it go to overtime.
Well, yeah, but you're not going to convert 2 3rd and 16s on one drive, are you?
And yeah, you can.
Yes, you are.
Narrator.
Yeah. Let me put it to you this way. Would you rather have Jalen Ramsey and no 2 first-rounders, or would you rather have Marcus Peters and all your draft picks?
Nice to say, Marcus Peters.
Yeah. Who's playing better than Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah. I mean, Jalen Ramsey's a good player, but I don't know, man. I mean, I just think everything about that game seems to encapsulate the Rams season. Like, they trade for Jalen Ramsey. They can't stop 2 3rd and 16s. You know, they have to run all these screens. They have to run all these bootlegs. I mean, they just didn't feel like they had answers on the offensive side of the ball this year. And that was very, very apparent on Saturday night.
This is going to be my early – I'm calling it now, just like Lamar Jackson. I'm calling it now. The Rams are going to – their over-under win total next year is going to be 7.5. I'm calling it now.
Well, that's taking the over-under.
That's way too low.
I'm telling you what's going to happen. So you bet accordingly, and then I will dunk on
you. Wait. Are you saying that they will win less than seven games?
I'm setting the over under at 7.5.
But then I will take the over.
Okay. That's fine. You can do that.
Okay. I'm taking there's going to be value there when the actual over under is 8 or 9.5.
They're not going to win 8 games is what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay.
I just think I say that because we've seen how the offense struggles without – they have no money. They have no draft picks. They have old people in the offensive line. Jared Goff's they have to have at least one more year on their – they can't get rid of him next year, I think. This costs them too much.
I think they have two more full years.
Two more years. Yeah. They don't have first-round pick in 2021.
They are not getting rid of Jared Goff anytime soon.
Yeah, so how's this going to magically fix itself? The Cardinals are presumably going to be better.
Wait, do you think it's going to magically be better if they get rid of Jared Goff? Like, what happens if you plug Blake Bortles in there?
I think it looks a lot like this. Maybe a one and a wins over Wilson, -1.5.
Except cheaper.
Jared Goff's dead cap hit next year is $51 million. He's not going anywhere.
You hate to see it if you're the. Yeah.
The Rams are definitely going to be cheering for a new collective bargaining agreement where the salary cap goes up to $275 million. Then they can eat that $51 million hit.
I mean, 2021, they could get rid of him if they wanted to, but not.
And they'll be coming off a 7-1 season, as predicted on December 22nd.
You were all over Lamar Jackson back in week 9 of 2019.
You know it.
Who can really question you?
Can't fault me.
So the 49ers are now the number one seed overall as we head into Sunday's games. The Seahawks dropped to the number 5 seed. As I mentioned, week 17 is for all the marbles in the NFC West and potentially all the marbles in the NFC. So the Seahawks, I can't do tiebreakers in my broken brain right now, but the 49ers have tiebreakers over the Saints and the Packers. So that's very important.
Brinson has been chugging NyQuil all day in case you're wondering why he can't do tiebreakers.
I'm about to go like Matrix on us and eat the little blue pill. Okay, so I can sleep tonight. But suffice to say, the Seahawks need to beat the Cardinals on Sunday. Dwayne Brown's already questionable, so we'll see whether or not he plays. But how would you handicap Week 17's division winner take all, knowing that ultimately it doesn't technically matter who wins the Seahawks 49ers game? Because, like, whoever loses is the 5 seed and has to go play a really good 4 seed. How would you handicap it, Breach? Who do you think comes out on top?
I think the Seahawks do, just because it's in Seattle, and the 49ers have looked so bad lately. I have no faith in them to go into one of the most hostile environments in the entire NFL. I mean, we saw Jimmy Garoppolo at home look like trash for 3 quarters before he finally got together for the final 2 possessions. He does that against the Seahawks. He's going to be down 34-7, and classic Seahawks, they would only win by 1 score because that's what all their games are, and the final score probably like 34-27. But I don't trust the defense. That's what carried San Francisco through this whole entire season. But also, the flip side of that is I think the 49ers need the win more. Because if you ask me what this team can do in the playoffs, if they get that bye and they can get healthy, I think they're a potential Super Bowl team. But if they're stuck playing in the wild card round, they're beat up. I think the Cowboys could beat them in that first round. So there is a high ceiling, but a really low floor. So this is one of those teams that is built like Sean's apartment. High ceiling, low floor.
I don't know what Pete Carroll has on John. Pete Carroll in his magic slacks and white shoes, because he pulsed the Seahawks no matter what if they're playing at home. 2 weeks ago, what happened in New Orleans when the 49ers were down 13 on 2 separate occasions? They just fold up and go home, or do they score 48 points?
Yeah, they did that, but that's not Seattle outdoors in the cold.
Is it tougher to play in the Superdome or tougher to play in Seattle?
I would say it's tougher to play in Seattle because you have the crowd noise plus the weather.
Unless you're the Saints going up there with Teddy Bridgewater.
What are you saying? The Saints win that game? I don't remember. Maybe Brinson can remind me.
who can really remember these things, Breach? We really do need to clip that audio of you saying they couldn't win there. Yeah, so the Seahawks do not have the tiebreaker of the Saints, obviously, because of a head-to-head situation. I would take the Seahawks in the spot. I think one of the things, too, that you can sort of look at, you know, when you talk about the 49ers is the second time that they played the Arizona Cardinals, despite having played them like 2 weeks before. So like you get to see Cliff Kingsbury's offense for the first time. You get to see Kyler Murray for the first time. You get all this tape. And then they still gave up 26 points to the Cardinals, in the second time around. And then, You know, the second time around against the Rams, they nearly lost at home. Both of the second times they played those teams, they were at home. They already lost to the Seahawks at home this year. And then one of the things that I think it was Mina Kimes tweeted it out. I don't know that it's, you know, I don't want to look at QBR, which is ESPN's proprietary metric for quarterback rankings, but opposing quarterbacks QBR versus San Francisco weeks 1 through 9 was 10.5, which is first in the NFL, and weeks 10 through 15, 73.4, which is 32nd. And look, Jared Goff wasn't perfect, but I mean, Jared Goff had a pretty big day, at least in terms of production. He had 27 to 46, 323 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. And there were guys running wide open. I mean, Tyler Higbee over 100 yards, Robert Woods over 100 yards, Cooper Kupp on the end zone, freaking Brandon Cooks. We didn't even think he was walking amongst the living, thought he was a zombie, and he pops back up and turns out Brandon Cooks is alive with 4 catches, 39 yards and a touchdown. So, Cooper, I don't know. It just feels like you can move the ball in the 49ers more than in recent games. It doesn't feel like they're a lockdown defense to me. Does that seem fair?
How did the Seahawks defense feel to you?
Seahawks defense sucks.
All right. I don't understand the one-sidedness of this conversation. I mean, I don't care about either. I mean, I like both teams. I like Russell Wilson a lot. And I like the Kyle Shanahan, Jimmy G sort of coming of age story. It's like a John Hughes movie, but I don't understand why the Seahawks get a pass on having a terrible defense. And look, they beat the Rams the first time and they lost the second time.
They don't get a pass, but if the 49ers have a bad defense right now, the Seahawks have a bad defense, I'm taking Russell Wilson over Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, that's the simple fact, and it's in Seattle, Ryan. Gosh, do you hate people in Seattle? Do you hate the whole city? Do you hate Starbucks?
He hates Starbucks. He hates fish. He hates Nirvana. He hates flannel.
No, I like Nirvana, and I like
Sean. He hates me.
Sean. He hates the Mariners. Everyone hates the Mariners.
Sean.
No one hates the Mariners.
Yeah, no one really does.
We're the lovable losers.
He hates Jay Buhner. He hates Randy Johnson. He hates A-Rod. He hates steroids. He hates it all, Sean. Sorry.
He hates steroids.
He hates Steve Largent.
No way.
No one hates Steve Largent.
He hates Matt Hasselbeck. He hates everything about Seattle.
But they have the same haircut.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He would hate Dan Orlovsky, but they sat on a plane next to each other one time.
Great hair, by the way.
Seattle doesn't get a pass. Seattle's defense just hasn't been good all year. So it's like their defense stinks, whereas with the 49ers, their defense has been historically great and now appears as if it might be dropping off a touch.
A touch?
A significant amount.
Yeah. Okay, that's we'll better.
See. No, it's not a significant amount. That's wrong.
Okay. He just gave you the stats. 73 QBR to a 10?
They are now closer in DVOA, and that was coming into the Rams game. They were closer.
Where they ranked, by the way?
What? Second. That's where they've ranked all year, right? What are you talking about?
You just said they're substantially worse. They are
closer. I bet coming out of this game that they are closer to the number 14, the Bills, than they are to the number 1 team, the Pats.
And where are the Seahawks?
The Seahawks are actually creeping up. They're 14th above average, baby.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see.
Mildly above average, just like I like them.
That's the Pick 6 podcast motto, I believe.
And just because you guys are wondering the current forecast for next Sunday, and you have to think this is the game that's getting flexed into Sunday night because I can't think of another game that would even fit the bill. So you're looking at playing primetime in Seattle. You're looking at about 40 degrees with a 40% chance of rain.
49ers, by the way,
losing by 10.
By the way, I have one more stat about the 49ers defense and how much worse they've gotten from Chase Stewart, a football perspective.
After
7 games this year, the 49ers allowed 77 points. After 7 games, the Ravens had allowed 156 points. Through 14 games, so before tonight, the Ravens had allowed fewer points over the course of the season than the 49ers. So think about how much of an advantage they had and how many points they've had to give up in the last 7 weeks.
The Ravens defense has been awesome.
Yeah.
That's more of a commentary on the Ravens defense being a lot better than the 49ers defense suddenly going completely and utterly south. They're second in DVOA coming into this week. They'll be top 5.
But at the beginning, it was like New England and San Francisco were light years better than third place. And that's not going to be the case anymore.
Okay. But I would imagine that everyone here would take the second place defensive team.
Here's the 49ers. 17, 17, 20, 3, 7, 0, 13. Break. And then we go when they play the Cardinals the first time. 25, 27, 26, 8, Packers, weird anomaly. 20 to the Ravens in the rain. 46, 29. This is a defense that's hemorrhaging points.
Okay. That's fine. I said, we'll see.
His voice got high pitched there.
And I said, we'll see.
He's getting nervous.
By the way, is there any other game they could?
Yeah, the Dolphins are playing the Bengals. That's a huge game. We should talk about that.
No, we're talking about Week 17.
That they were could be flexed.
That was just a cheap shot at Brett.
Titans Texans could be flexed.
Because the Texans have already clinched the division. If they have nothing to play for, they're not going to bench their start. There's too much risk in that.
Oh, no, because if the Titans lost to the Saints.
No, there's still something going on in that game for the Titans, because even if the Steelers beat the Jets and the Steelers lose in Week 17 to the Ravens, the Titans can still make the playoffs to beat the Texans in Week 17.
Yeah, but the Breach is right. The Texans could be locked into the 4 seed if the Chiefs went out.
Yeah, they can let the Titans win for sure.
And like, you could put Steelers or say you put Steelers Ravens there, and the Steelers have to win to get in. But if the Titans lose earlier in the day, then the Steelers are already in, and then that game means nothing. So like,
are the games not at the same time?
No. I'm saying if you flex another game to Sunday night, it's got to be a game where none of the other games have any effect on what will happen to at least one of the teams involved.
What about this? Let's flex Falcons Buccaneers because it'd be fun as hell.
Jameis Winston.
I would love to do that because we could start the podcast at 7 p.m.
No. We'd leave with Jameis, baby. There we go. All Jameis. Steelers, Ravens. Yeah, I think it has to be. Yeah, I mean, you can go and lock it. It has to be 49ers, Seahawks. As I've been saying for weeks, anyway. Yeah.
If the Eagles win tomorrow, maybe you could flex them next Sunday.
Eagles,
but
Giants.
Then you would need the Cowboys to win against the Redskins, and then
you have to flex it too far in advance. Advance to know. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the other two games on the docket.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived, thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul. The designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's the butterfly effect for
real. All right, Pat's Bills. Time to talk a little AFC East for the 17th year in 18 seasons. 17th time in 18 seasons. The New England Patriots have won the AFC East. I got to hand it to the Bills here, though, Ryan. A for effort. You went out there and you tried. You gave it your all. 24-17, Patriots win. Josh Allen actually ended up almost being the top fantasy performer on the DFS showdown slate. He was the top fantasy performer in this game with 24 points. The Patriots covered 6.5 despite not looking like they should cover at all. The Pick 6 podcast parlay, dead on arrival by 7 p.m. Eastern, thanks to the over in this game hitting. Lovely. That's 11 straight division titles. The only time they didn't win was when the Dolphins won in 2008 when Tom Brady tore his ACL in week one. And even then, the Patriots still only lost by a tiebreaker. Are you starting? What's your takeaway here? Are you optimistic about the Patriots? Do you think the Bills are a problem? Where do you go with this?
Both. This is the best offensive game the Patriots have had all season, I feel like. And they did it against a good defense, a defense that gave up 24 points. And I'm sure you guys will dunk all over them for not being the Baltimore Ravens and or the New England Patriots defensively. But I thought they did a pretty good job. I will say this. They had issues tackling Sony Michel, and that led to a lot of first downs and kept drives going. And on the other side of the ball, Josh Allen – you can live with him. I said it before, he's a rich man's Mr. Trubisky, but he still makes mistakes. On the first drive, he overthrew Dawson Knox for what could have been a long gain, probably even a touchdown. And his touch on deep passes isn't great. It's inconsistent. Sometimes he's money on a throw to Smoke Brown, that was fantastic. He hit Dawson Knox later in the game on another great pass, but other times he just airmails balls and makes poor decisions, inaccurate on crossing passes. One to Cole Beasley came to mind on third down. And those things, if he can sort out, I mean, this team is going to be really, really good. I know that everyone on the team loves him. Cole Beasley said after the game he's going to be a true franchise quarterback for years to come, and it's good that they like him. I don't know, and Sean can talk to this, I don't know how Bears players feel about Mitch Trubisky, whether they like him or not, but I know sometimes there's some frustration there. You don't see that in Buffalo, and I think that says a lot. Their defense is really good. Their offense is coming along. Devin Singletary is really going to be a really special player. And Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean deserve a ton of credit. And I think the play of the game for me, just in terms of you rarely see Bill Belichick getting outsmarted, but the tackle-eligible touchdown pass, the throwback pass to Dawson, blew Bill Belichick's mind, and I'm sure John Harbaugh somewhere was high-fiving himself for not getting got like Belichick did on Saturday night. But, yeah, it's a great win for the Patriots, and I think this is the sort of thing where after you watch this game, you say, yeah, remember every year when we say the Patriots look like they're not going to win any football games and they end up winning out? This is the game that sort of becomes the turning point.
And my fun fact for the podcast is Wilson just mentioned the Deion Dawkins touchdown catch, the left tackle eligible play. Deion Dawkins is the only player on the Bills roster who caught a touchdown this year and last year. Their left tackle.
Wow, good. That is a fun fact.
That is a really good one.
Sweet hands, too. He made it look easy.
He did. Soft hands, quick feet. Heck of a
nice dance move afterwards.
Look, I mean, I don't want this to be a, you know, we all take turns dunking on Sean or anything, but you know, it's time for you to own up and admit the Bills and Sean McDermott and Josh Allen are quality competition in the NFL, and they're going to win a playoff game, I think.
Okay, first of all, it's been like 3 weeks of me repeating that Josh Allen is playing like a top half quarterback in the Bills.
But I don't think you believe what you're saying. You don't believe it, Sean. All right, we want to hear you believe it.
Hold on.
Before you go there. Let me point out that I wouldn't say it's been 3 weeks of you saying he's been playing like a top half of the league quarterback. I feel like it's been 3 weeks of you saying he's
top 16.
Feels like it's been like top 15 to 20 quarterback is what you've been saying. You sound like me when I go out and do something stupid and I'm like not really apologizing to my wife, but I'm saying I'm sorry. And she always goes, you're saying you're sorry, but you don't mean it. Like, and I'm like, well, I don't know what you want me to do. I'm not sorry. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. Of course I'm sorry. Like, that's what you sound like, Sean. You're like, I've been saying for weeks that Josh Allen is doing a respectable job of not pooping his pants. Like,
and this man absolutely hated Sean McDermott last year. Hated him with a passion. The fire of a thousand suns.
Look, you went all in on the Tyrod Taylor benching for Nate Peterman. It's back. It's blowing up in your face as badly as anything on this podcast ever has. And it's time to admit that you were dead wrong and that the Bills are going to wax the Texans in the playoffs. Furthermore, I would.
This is where I'm going to start. I can find the receipts for when I wrote that Josh Allen is playing like a top
six quarterback. Sean, one more thing.
Jesus Christ.
Please explain to me why you had Josh Allen ranked 18th in your quarterback rankings this week.
Because he has not played well the last 2 weeks. As soon as I wrote that article, he has not played well the last 2 weeks. Furthermore, I'm not going to apologize after – look, I think Sean McDermott's a good coach. And what he has built in Buffalo is, like, if you had to pick one team in the AFC East that is most likely to succeed the Patriots dynasty, it's clearly Buffalo by a long shot. I've been calling Sean McDermott this year. Last year I was hating on him. This year he convinced me he's a good coach. I don't understand how you walk away from this game and your takeaway is that, ha, Josh Allen's made it. Josh Allen has made the leap. Josh Allen in this, you guys, Brinson just asked, should we take turns dunking on Sean for Josh Allen? I don't think Josh Allen played well on Saturday. I think he made 3 or 4 jaw-dropping throws, which you all know he's capable of. I think in the first half, he was like 3 of 9 or 4 of 9 for like 18 yards. And then he makes an incredible 19. Downfield throw to the 1 yard line. I was going off my memory, so be impressed that I remember that. He makes an incredible downfield throw, and you have to give him credit for that. And the Bills score a touchdown. They're back in the game. And he makes a couple more, as Ryan was going through, incredible downfield throws. One of them with the pressure in his face was like a throw that only one or two quarterbacks can probably make. But
makes
then
it you go good to, off to Josh Allen.
I was going to say Duck Hodges. But so then you go to the final drive, though. Are we just going to ignore his blatant missed touchdown that would have tied the game on third down? where, or I think it was second down, in the back of the end zone, Dawson Knox is running free
Well, I wouldn't call that a blatant missed touchdown. That's a pretty tough touch.
Just said there's only three quarterbacks who can make that other throw. There's probably only three or four quarterbacks who could have made that throw.
I think if you go back and look at that, Sean's actually right.
That's the issue with Josh Allen, is his touch on those sorts of passes.
Sure.
Here's the thing. I want to actually remind me this, Debo, when next time we talk to Brady. I want to talk to Brady about Josh Allen's, like, arm, because I've heard people say his arm's too low. And that makes it a little harder to do those little dink passes or touch passes. Because that Sean is right. He's not right about much tonight in terms of the Bills.
What happened after the...
So I was going to keep going. So he misses that, and then he takes a sack to set up the fourth down from the 15. And that was the other thing, is you can't take a sack on that third down. You just have to bail on the play because you can't take it from first and goal at the 5 or 6, wherever they were, into at the 15.
Well, they were at the 9, which was a huge – that's not the 5 or 6. Big difference.
But 9 to 15 is a huge difference as well. So this is my problem with Josh Allen, is that it's either a 10 on every throw, like it's an incredible throw, or it's a flat 0 or a 1. I can't remember. Someone put it that way on Twitter.
Get angry with Jimmy G taking all the sacks on Saturday night, too?
I literally just said that the 6 sacks, I thought a lot of them fell on him.
Wow. 23-year-armed, like, upside-riddled, big-armed quarterback goes into Foxborough against Bill Belichick and league's best secondary and doesn't make perfect throws every time and manages to miss his tight end on a difficult touch pass. Like, get out of here. What are you doing?
I'm responding to you trying to take this as a Josh Allen victory lap. I wasn't going to come in here and hate on Josh Allen for his performance. He played like Josh Allen. But
Sean, you're falling right into his trap.
So moving on to the Bills, I completely agree that they can beat the Texans. I was already thinking about
Will.
Like,
do not they? Not
I was just
will.
Thinking about, like, they man, what I have to pick between is backing Bill O'Brien or backing Josh Allen, and it's just in a game against Deshaun Watson. I don't feel good about either of those options. I think Prisco was, because he's a big Josh Allen Bills guy, so he's taking his victory laps as well. I agree with them though; they are going to be an incredibly tough out. The problem is if they have to play the Ravens or Chiefs. I think those are the two teams that can dispatch them. Just because I don't know if the Ravens can keep up offensively, but against like the Patriots, 100%, I think they could beat them.
I mean, also, I think the Bills. Oh, go ahead, Ryan. I was going to say
the last thing about Josh Allen that I thought was awesome, that 3rd-and-1 conversion where he fake jumped over the line and then ran around. That was fantastic. Very few quarterbacks to do that as well.
I was going to say that the Bills lost to the Ravens by 7, and I realized that they had a late touchdown to kind of cut it close. But I mean, that game wasn't a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. Wind was a problem, but I don't think the Bills are going to make a Super Bowl run because I do agree that Josh Allen's inconsistencies will make it difficult for them to win multiple playoff games in a row. But I mean, like, God forbid they start designing, like, God forbid he gets hot. I mean, if he gets hot, they can do anything. Like, if he starts, if you don't cover Smokey Brown, and Smokey Brown, John Brown abused Stephon Gilmore on that deep touchdown pass. Abused him. Like, he was in coverage on him. I realized they had a safety over there too, but he juked him outside. He got Stephon Gilmore turned around. Stephon Gilmore's probably the defensive player of the year, and he straight up took him deep. And that's an easy throw for Allen. Look, he overthrew a lot of his passes in that game. He's got an absolute cannon arm. The Bills defense is really good. They got a smart head coach. Devin Singletary's kind of coming into his own. I thought the Patriots defense, played pretty well, all things considered. I mean, if you're going to give up 17 points to the Bills in that game, to me, the biggest takeaway, I would say the two big takeaways are, one, that the Bills are going to beat the Texans. That's the likely wild card weekend matchup. Feels like a 1 p.m. Sunday CBS game.
4:30 p.m. Saturday ESPN ABC game. 100%. That's the Texans slot. It used to be the Bengals slot. Now it's the Texans slot. There is no doubt in my mind. You can record this one. Right. It's happening.
Oh, because it was like we got the Raiders-Texans before.
Breach knows tiebreakers. Breach knows when players are going to sit in week 16 and week 17, and he knows the playoff seeding times for every.
Do you think then we get we would get Chiefs? Oh yeah, good call, Breach. That's right. Yeah, we would get Chiefs Steelers. Although Chiefs Titans might be the Saturday afternoon game if that ends up being the matchup.
They did that exact matchup. But I think if they had their choice, yes. Patrick Mahomes isn't going to be in that, because the 4:30 slot is where they put the worst playoff game. And that would not be Patrick Mahomes, no matter who he's playing.
No, you're right. The Chiefs-Titans game was a divisional. Was that the divisional game? No. Had to be a wild card game.
Oh, you're talking about the Alex Smith?
Yeah, no, the
Marcus Mariota touchdown pass to himself?
Yeah.
Was that was on a Saturday though, right?
Man.
Too many playoff games.
I think that game was at night. I feel like I remember that game being played at night. I could be wrong.
It'd be the 2017 Chiefs. Let's see. That game was played. They only had one playoff game. That's for sure. Saturday, 4:35. There we go. You decide for yourself who's right. Anyway, no, I agree. If it's Chiefs Steelers, that's locked for the 1 p.m. CBS. You better get out of church early or pretend like you were going to church and come home anyway. Cause that's going to be this game on CBS.
Steelers projection, they're going to win that game.
I'm not predicting that.
They will not win. I do think they will keep it close as Andy Reid runs the ball a bunch in the second half against a good defense. I'm telling you, the Bills are going to be 3-point underdogs to the Texans in the wild card round on Saturday at 4:30 on ESPN. And we are all, I mean, not you guys because you don't bet, but like Debo, lock it in, buddy. We are taking the Bills with the points. We're taking the Bills to the money line. We're doing a 3-unit play on it. And we may even parlay with the over because the Texans are going to be chasing points late. Deshaun Watson is going to throw a pick to Tre'Davious White. He's going to house it. The Bills are going to obliterate the Texans. Bill O'Brien, we'll get to that in a second. But I just think the Bills are good. The Patriots, I don't know what they're going to be coming out of this weekend. Coming into Week 16, they were 5-1 to win the Super Bowl. I would take that bet if you can find it.
Yeah, I mean, see this movie every year. You know what's going to happen. You can say all the time, all you want, that they're not a good team. They find a way.
Let's see what they are. I don't know if they'll post the odds right now with all the in the middle of a weekend of games, but we can look and see if.
I will say this while you look that up. One issue I had with the way the Bills played in addition to not tackling Sonny Michel is I don't understand why they were not double teaming Julian Edelman all the time. They did it on third down a few times and it worked. Every other time they're playing zone, he's just running through there and Tom Brady's hitting them in stride for 15, 25, 30 yard gains and like they'd never seen him before. I do love the fact that he flopped and gave himself a concussion and he magically showed back up in the game after two plays off. I don't know how that works, but.
No, he was out for a whole quarter. He left with 10 minutes left in the third quarter and didn't come back till 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And on his first play back, Ryan, this part will vindicate you. Brady hit him for a 30-yard pass because the Buffalo Bills didn't cover him for some reason. And for me, the biggest surprise of this game was Tom Brady. I don't know if he was eating extra avocados, if he did some extra pliability work this week, but he was on point. I thought this was his best game of the season, 26-33 for 271 yards. But this was old school Brady, which you come to expect. We saw him throw that vicious block on N'Keal Harry's run. We saw him go back the Brady QB sneak. We saw one of those. Those never fail, although the Patriots should have run that on fourth down in the second quarter. They didn't. Who cares? That's a Belichick thing. That's not Brady. And then, you know, he was hitting Edelman left and right. And you realize when Edelman went down, I think the Patriots punted on their first series without him, how big of a part to that offense he is. That thing absolutely falls apart with him off the field. So obviously he's got to stay healthy. And that's a big reason why the Patriots need the bye because Edelman's beat up. That guy needs a bye week so he has 2 weeks to rest. But if Brady plays smart football like this, you know, this wasn't 400 yards and four touchdowns. It was 271 yards, one touchdown, but it was exactly what this Patriots offense needs. They don't need him to be a superstar because they have running backs. They have Sonny Michel. They have Rex Burkhead. They have James White. They just need to be him slightly above average, and that's what he was.
By the way, the Patriots, according to the Westgate, a.k.a. Superbook USA, 7-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Ooh,
if you can bet on that, please. They have to win two.
Why did it go down?
It was just 5 on my local. So
have you watched them play?
The Chiefs 8-1 to win the Super Bowl. Also, take that.
Ooh.
The Chiefs probably won't get a bye, but like I think if you get a bet in on the Patriots and the Chiefs, you have a very good chance. I would have to do breach. You can do this math for me maybe in my head. A, you're probably going to get the 2 seed in the AFC. The Ravens are just too expensive, but B. I think there's a pretty good chance that the 3 seed won't end up playing the 2 seed, or will that definitely happen?
That'll definitely happen.
That's the other way around. Okay, so that would be the downside, is like you're probably going to get.
But that means one of your teams is definitely going to be in the AFC title game, which gets you a step closer to winning your bet, so it's not a horrible idea.
Yeah, the only downside of that is you probably can't hedge it then if you wanted to do that because the Ravens would be favored. But anyway, That's the Pats Super Bowl talk. do you want to, does anybody else want to espouse on anything related?
Well, I just would say.
Sean, you can apologize for Josh Allen if you want to.
I just want to ask one question since you brought up the Patriots Super Wads and said we should all bet it. Does anyone here actually think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl if you had to make a pick right now? Just yes or no on the Patriots. You don't have to pick another team.
I say pick another team.
I would pick another team.
I'm hesitating because every year we have this conversation and every year they stick it in our faces. Every year.
I mean, I don't think they will, but here's the thing.
Ryan Stallings.
No, it just feels
I think Ryan's
like,
angry.
It's just we know how this ends.
I mean, this is what happened last year.
Let's do the Patriots win the Super Bowl podcast right now. Just save ourselves. So we'll have to be at 4 a.m. on Super Bowl Monday trying to explain it.
But don't you – I mean, like, don't – I mean, I know I said that, like, everybody thought the Chargers were going to beat the Patriots in Foxborough last year, and you're all like – but, like, a lot of people were picking the Chargers to go in there and win that game after they took – if they dispatched the Ravens in Baltimore. It's like they're the hot team coming in. The Patriots been limping in. Tom Brady was looking old down the stretch, and then the Patriots just – magically had a run game together after 2 weeks off and obliterated the Chargers. It's very easy to see them. Like, who are they going to get? The Bills again?
Well, here's the thing. The one point of hesitation I have for not picking the Patriots immediately after what they just did to the Bills. I have to look. I don't have the head coaches in front of me who were in the playoffs last year, but John Harbaugh, Andy Reid, Sean McDermott are all guys that have faith in order that will come in prepared. I mean, Sean McVay was like, oh, my God, I'm on the same field with Bill Belichick. I can't believe it.
Anthony Lynn was in the playoffs last year. Nobody thought he was going to beat Belichick. Frank Reich.
Yeah, in hindsight, picking Anthony Lynn to win in Foxborough over Bill Belichick may have been a slight miscalculation on my part. I don't know.
I will take some solace in knowing that those coaches have played him, number one. They've beaten him, number two, except for Sean McDermott, who's played him well twice now this season. And they're good coaches.
So, Ryan, are you picking the Patriots or any other team?
I'm going with the other team. I talked myself into it because of the coaching.
And one thing I will say is this is setting up.
When you say any other team, you're saying Patriots versus Field?
Is that what I'm saying?
At this point in the season, do you think it's going to be the Patriots or someone else? That was the question.
Yeah, someone else.
That's Patriots to the Field. Yeah, you take someone else.
And real quick, because we were just talking about what their chances are, this is setting up that they're going to have to play the Chiefs in the divisional round because if the Patriots win next week, they get the 2 seed. Kansas City's almost certainly going to get the 3 seed. And if the Chiefs win, the 3 seed plays the 2 seed. So it is literally getting close to lock territory where we're going to get a Chiefs-Patriots divisional round game. And that's why I think the Chiefs are a team that can go in to Foxborough in the playoffs and win.
One little bump in the road there. Here's what's going to happen. The Titans are going to end up getting the playoff spot. They're going to go in there and beat the Chiefs. Then they're going to end up going to New England and getting their doors blown off by the Patriots. That's what's going to happen. Well, they're going to hire Jeff Fisher before the game to coach the game. They're going to lose 55-0.
Let's not forget too that because the
I can see it happening
because the Patriots are look like the last 3 times they've had a wild card matchup in New England, they had Anthony Lynn's Chargers, who were hot, but, down to like 7 defensive backs on their defense, and they just plowed through them. Then the year before that, they had Mike Mularkey and Marcus Mariota. The year before that, they had Brock Osweiler and Bill O'Brien.
How'd that work? That,
not well. The year before that, they had Andy Reid and Alex Smith. Remember, Andy Reid made you won't believe this, a critical time gaffe as it related to the clock. And then the year before that, they had I guess it was Joe Flacco. So I mean, like, it's been a hot minute since.
And the year before that, or a couple years before that, they had Tim Tebow come in there with the Broncos after they smoked the Steelers.
No. The year before that, they had there was Deflategate.
Oh, right, that was the Colts.
Yep. And then in 2012, 2012 was the Texans as well, who they beat 41-28, and they hired
2011 was the Broncos and Tim Tebow.
That was a Gary Kubiak and Matt Schaub. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that to Breach's point, in 2011 was in fact the Tim Tebow 45-10 game. To Breach's point, if you look at the last 10 years of Patriots wildcard matchups, hasn't exactly been Andy Reid, the reigning MVP, Patrick Mahomes, and a suddenly blossoming Chiefs defense. Like this would easily be the most difficult matchup the Patriots have had in the divisional round since the Jets in 2010 when they lost and with Rex Ryan and Mark.
What did Bart Scott say?
Can't wait.
Can't wait. That's right. Take that, Sal.
Mofo tried to wax my back one time. Nut job.
Too much information.
He next said he would donate $100 for every hair he pulled off to charity.
Scott?
Bart. He doesn't have that much money.
I was like, no. I was like, if you like, you're gonna hire somebody. He's like, no, I get to do it. I was like, no chance, bro.
Sure. I surprised you did not do that for the content. I mean, you got like tackled on HQ during the fantasy telethon,
and then got punched in the face.
That was not something I had a choice in. So,
stop it. I loved it.
I didn't want to. Devo, did I want to do that? You were there.
We were there too.
We were all there.
You were. It's like Christmas.
You guys were behind the scenes talking to people about stuff.
Behind the scenes.
I want to do it, Devo.
FBI over here.
I don't think you didn't not want to do it.
Thank you.
The second one I didn't want to do. I remember when they were like, come back out. I was like, I'm really.
You ran out there.
You wanted to do the first one. I remember that.
I didn't want to get smashed to a table, and I definitely didn't when Eric Young was like, hey man, listen, I can't smash you to that table. He's like, if it goes poorly, you'll be crippled for life. If it goes well and you're not hurt, it won't look very good. Okay, no win for anybody.
Brenton, you're straight out of the P.T. Barnum school of thought that all publicity is good publicity. Brenton will literally do anything if it involves – it will get him more followers. It will be funny that everyone will laugh at, and he doesn't get seriously injured, but he will be okay with minor injury. Did you have to sign any sort of documents to make sure – any waivers?
Every year I do with CBS for stuff.
The one time he wasn't happy is when Pete Prisco threw a stuffed animal on his face.
That was awesome.
It hit me in the eye.
Now that's entertaining.
It hit me in the tooth or something. You know what else really hurts? When you're out of cash, coming out of Christmas, you don't have any money. It's time to make some picks. Playoff Pick'em is here. CBS Sports is a new way for you to up the action with the Playoff Pick'em. Whether you want to pick the games for cash or compete against friends, we have you covered with two easy ways to play. First, enter the Playoff Challenge for your chance to win $5,000 if we're eligible. All you need to do is pick the winners, and the champ walks away with a big $5,000 in cash. Second, get your friends, family, coworkers, or anybody that loves football involved by creating a fully customizable private playoff pool. You'll be in full control with options to choose the matchups you want to include, how to pick, scoring, and more. Best of all, Playoff Pick'em is totally free. So go to cbssports.com/playoff or download the CBS Sports app now to start your pool and play for $5,000. By the way, I do a pool every year with a bunch of friends here locally. CBS is the best. It is legit the best way to go. All other pool office managers stink, and CBS's format is easy. And entering your picks this morning, I was leaving. I had to put in picks for the games tonight. I think I went 1-2, but I put them in on my phone as I was driving down the road. Just kidding. I did before I left. Texans 23, Bucks 20. Texans push. Not my pool. They're -3.5. Damn it. The under 50.5 hit. Ronald Jones was the top fantasy performer, found the end zone, caught a couple of long passes. Houston wins the AFC South, and we got to ride. You know, Sean, if we're gonna mock you for Josh Allen, we'll let you have a moment here. The Jameis coaster. Everything you would want from Jameis Winston was present in this game. He threw it on, I think it was first pass. He threw a pick six.
First pass, a pick six.
Second series.
He threw 5 interceptions total, which means he was 1 short of being the first ever 30 and 30 member in NFL history with 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. He led
the Ricky Henderson of NFL.
Fourth member ever?
No, 4 interceptions. He threw so 4. He's 2 away. Brenton, you got it stuck in your head because you wrote that story today that said he threw 5, and then it just became locked into your head, and I tagged you in Slack. I was like, Brenton, I know you think Jameis threw 5 because it probably felt like he threw 8, but it was really only 4.
He only threw 4?
and that's still
I thought he threw 5.
The funny thing is, he's literally the only quarterback where you can lose count.
I mean, I just kind of stopped. I was watching bowl games. I was like, it's 5 for Jameis.
They did. The Texans did drop another one.
Or maybe that's what it was.
Like 2 other ones. Yeah, at least 2 other ones. Yeah.
He could have thrown 7 interceptions today. He threw for 335 yards, 4 interceptions. Like, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's they're going to give $30 million a year this offseason.
I had just come around on the idea of
keeping
him after he had the back-to-back 450-yard games without – I think he had, like, 2 interceptions. It's like, by his standards, like, you'll live with 2 Jameis picks. Like, that's just a given. This is now the 6th time this year And 6 out of 15 times on their first drive, Jameis Winston has been picked off, which is truly remarkable. I feel like it's happened more. What was also hilarious was that on his second series, he threw another pick six, but it was called back for, like, blocking the back or something on the return, so it was just a normal interception. I mean, this entire game was just drunk. Like, it wasn't just Jameis. I mean, Jameis was the drunkest out of everyone, but the first quarter, I feel like, must have taken over an hour. Or, like, it was, like, a minute and 12 seconds of game time had come off in the first 20 minutes, like, since the game kicked off. There was a blocked field goal. Bruce Arians challenged PI and lost. He wasn't allowed to challenge an obvious fumble. Like, everything happened in this game, and I still can't believe the over didn't hit. It was, what was the score at halftime? 17-17 at halftime, and the two teams combined for 3 field goals in the second half. I have no idea how that happened.
I turned the game on at 1:03 p.m., and I see Bradley Roby celebrating in the end zone. I'm like, what? Is this like a replay leading up to the start of the game? Nope. It's 6-0.
Yeah. I mean, it was out of the gate. And it was just like a – it's one of those things where, like, you know, like the way Ryan describes it, like you're settling in, you know, and like everybody's like – like, people are losing their minds on Twitter for, like, 30 minutes because it's just like, Jameis picks! Jameis! And, like, you could tell, like, how unsettled Jameis was and how, in a weird way, like, throwing that interception breach almost maybe got him to check back in and get ready to play.
That's kind of what it feels like all the time with him. It is literally all or nothing. If he was your chef, he's the guy who could make you an exquisite 5-course French meal, or he's the guy who could accidentally amputate your left arm with his cookie knife. You just don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get all the yardage, or you're going to get all the interceptions. You're going to get the touchdowns. You're going to get the interceptions. It's just all or nothing with him. And my favorite part of all of this is that literally an hour before this game, we had Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, saying, hey, Tampa's locked into getting Jameis. He is on board for next season. They're going to use a tag. And this was totally one of those could turn into a hold my beer meme because Jameis was like, ha, they're signing me next season. Wait till you see what I'm going to do in this game. I'm going to go out there and throw a pick six on my first pass. So this is totally, Brinson, you said, Jameis Winston coaster, man. I don't know what you do. I think you have to keep him absolutely at least one more year with Bruce Arians to see how well he adjusts and if he'll ever cut down on these interceptions. I'm starting to feel like he won't. And you know what, though?
What clued you in?
Only today's game. It wasn't anything else ever. No, it's just I don't know what you do. But, you know, I will give him the benefit of the doubt on one thing. I think they had two guys out there catching passes that had never played an NFL game before. He didn't have Chris Godwin. He didn't have Mike Evans. So this was a bare-bones receiving core that he was working with. He probably, you know, you want to have a little bit of chemistry with these guys. They're zero. So, you know, this was a bad performance. But considering who he was working with, I don't think it was his worst game ever.
Well, let me ask you guys this because Pro Football Focus's Steve Palazzolo tweeted this out during the game, and it's a great question. And I knew immediately which way I would go. Would you rather have, for the next 3 years, Jameis Winston or your boy, Sean, Derek Carr? I didn't even hesitate.
Oh, my God.
That's what, like, the would you rather,
Sean just made?
Would you rather poke out your left eye or your right eye? Would you rather cut off your right thumb or your left thumb, Sean?
And, yeah, that's worth mentioning, by the way. James was still injured.
I think it's like, would you rather abruptly have your entire arm sliced off by a flying guillotine, or would you like to see, like, a tiny little man, like, shave down your thumb slowly over the course of, like 10 years? Like, that's what Derek Carr is, just slow, painful death. And James,
so which way are you guys going?
Left or right. Give me James.
Well, we got to let Sean pick because he hates them both.
It's not remotely close.
Sean fell asleep. What's going on over there? You okay?
I can't decide. I can't live with either choice.
Debo, like, we're going to need you to cut that noise that Sean made.
Oh, my gosh.
It was literally paining me to think about having to pick three.
All right, you think some more. Breach, what are you doing?
I would take Jameis Winston all the way. It's like, 100%. You know what? Do you want the crazy hot chick, or do you want, like, the average girl that is just
– has a terrible arm.
She has a terrible arm and doesn't like pizza, so you can never eat pizza while she's around. You want the – I'm taking Jameis. I'm taking Jameis.
At least with Jameis, I mean, I think the thing that we've seen with Bruce Arians so far this year is that you can harness his power a little.
For good, not just evil.
Exactly. Like, whereas – and by the way, Jameis Winston, he would be 25 years old. He'll turn 26 on January 6th. Derek Carr, I believe, 28, and will turn 29 this offseason.
So let me put it this way, Sean. Who would John Gruden rather have right now?
I would take Jameis. I think Jameis, even though the turnovers are a problem.
To it fully and clear.
Own it.
No, I will say it that one time, and that's it.
You take Jameis Winston on the Bears right now.
100%. Yeah, he didn't even answer.
Yes, the question is Mitch Trubisky or Jameis Winston. Of course it's Jameis Winston.
Okay, Chase Daniel or Jameis Winston. You can have that. By the way, I think John Gruden would rather have Jameis Winston right now, too, and going forward next year.
I used to joke that he was for sure going to end up in Vegas. It's not going to happen anymore, but it seemed before the year like the perfect landing spot for him.
So, yeah, he throws a lot of interceptions. We can all agree on that. But he actually throws a lot of touchdowns as well.
And he's gonna throw for 5,000 yards this year. Like, yeah. He needs less than 100 yards in Week 17 to throw for 5,000 yards, which has only happened 11 times in NFL history. He could also break two records in one game. He needs 570 yards, which sounds ridiculous, but this is Jameis Winston we're talking about, so I'm not going to rule out anything. He needs 570 yards against the Falcons to break the single season passing record, which is held by Peyton Manning, and that would also break the single game passing record, which is held by Norm Van Brocklin. And you know what? If there is one quarterback who could pull this off while also throwing 12 interceptions in the game, it is absolutely Jameis Winston. So I think
Unfortunately, Breach, he won't hold either record very long because Andy Dalton's going to throw for 12,000 passing yards.
Hey, Dalton's going up against the Browns, Brinson. Don't make the jokes. He's going to set the records. It's not done.
He can throw 8,000 against the Dolphins in Week 16 today, and then he can throw another 4,000 against the Browns.
You know what's funny about this whole Jameis Winston thing, this whole roller coaster ride off a cliff, is that it totally overshadowed how crappy the Texans offense played. Because everyone after this game was only talking about Jameis Winston. When the Texans are the team that are still going to be playing in 2 weeks, the Texans are the team that everyone should be worrying about. Because we were saying, hey, the Bills are absolutely going to beat this team. And this game was an example why. They couldn't move the ball at all against Tampa Bay. They were, when you're forced to become one-dimensional, they can't do anything. And
well,
that's
I would argue that the problem was the – first of all, the Buccaneers secondary has gotten a lot better, but mostly Bill O'Brien was just hell bent on running on first down with Carlos Hyde. He ran 17 times for 27 yards. You're playing against one of the all time great pass funnels with cornerbacks who've gotten better, but you have Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Stills, and Will Fuller. And you think your best, most efficient offensive approach is to pound Carlos Hyde at the middle against Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh, the best run blocking duo in the entire NFL? What the hell is the matter with you, Bob?
And Will Fuller is actually why they're going to lose.
Was injured.
Well, Will Fuller left.
But let's just assume he's not going to be playing any full games for the rest of the time, because that's literally every podcast that we talk about the Texans starts with Will Fuller got injured.
Bill O'Brien said after the game he was going to play his starters in Week 17 against the Titans, even though it's a meaningless game. You can almost guarantee he's going to trot Will Fuller out there. Like, he's going to trot Will Fuller out there, he's going to rip his hamstring off, because that offense goes to total crap when Will Fuller's not in there. Like, for whatever reason – I don't
it's
know
like
what
the Patriots and Julian Edelman and no one else. That's what happened.
Or the Eagles and Deshaun Jackson. I mean, you know, more accurate comparison because of the deep threat. But anyway,
My point is that you have Dre Hopkins and you have Jules out there and no other plan B, and you can shut those guys down if you defend them properly. But if
DeAndre Hopkins got 9 targets, you're in a game against the wildest quarterback, the Jameis coaster in the NFL. It's 17-7 and a half. You're telling me DeAndre Hopkins is leaving that game with 9 targets? This needs to be a pepper spray, spray and pray attack on DeAndre Hopkins. You fire DeAndre Hopkins over and over and over and over again and just let him win one-on-one. Run slants, run goes, run curls, run everything. He's the best. He can be the best receiver in football. Right now, maybe behind Michael Thomas, whatever, but like 9 targets to
he's probably being, if I had to guess, he's probably being double teamed because there's no one else out there, but that's probably why they didn't throw at him every time.
To Brinson's point, the Texans finished with 161 passing yards. So 161 passing yards against the Buccaneers defense that gave up 490 to the Rams, that gave up 342 to the Cardinals, that gave up 312 to the New York Giants.
And here we are. I mean, yes, the Buccaneers pass defense has gotten a little bit better, but not enough better that you totally give up on the pass and run on every first down. So everything the Texans doing is totally perplexing. And that is why Brinson has been telling you this whole entire podcast to call your bookie and get that bet in against the Texans, no matter who they're playing in that first round playoff game.
The Bill O'Brien is 1-3 in the playoffs.
And can we throw out that his only win came against the Bengals, so that doesn't even count as a win.
Good point.
He's a better record than Andy Dalton in the playoffs.
No, I think they also beat the Raiders, but Derek Carr was injured, so he has beaten the Bengals and like the Raiders' third-string quarterback.
Gary Kubiak beat Andy Dalton.
Oh, yeah. Then the Bill O'Brien's only win came against Connor Cook.
By the way, Jameis Winston won the poll. 2,900 respondents, 57.9% of the people wanted Jameis over Derek Carr.
Did somebody do that?
Yeah, Steve Palazzolo put it out on Twitter during the game.
I thought you were like trying to claim that you just tweeted that and like 3,000 people responded.
I was wondering why you looked so shocked and borderline upset.
He tweeted out, used the hashtag Eddie Murphy to get everyone in who was on Twitter tonight.
So Bill O'Brien's offenses have scored 27 points against the luck box Oakland Raiders, 16 points against the New England Patriots that year in 2016. They scored, remember that year against Kansas City? They scored 0 points against the Chiefs, and they lost 30-0. I think, was it Tyreek Hill that took it back to the house that first?
That was Brandon Weeden in that game, I believe, right?
Yeah, sure was. But somebody took the kick to the house in that game. And they scored 7 points against the Indianapolis Colts last year. Was that, and I could be crazy, that involved Deshaun Watson, who somehow went 29-49 or 235 and one touchdown and one interception against a Colts defense that wasn't very good. So I'm pretty convinced the Bills are going to thrash the Houston Texans. You're talking about a major coaching upgrade in Sean McDermott over Bill O'Brien.
My bad. That was Brian Hoyer. I actually wrote a story about this.
Yep.
And the headline is, Texans fans start saddest chant in NFL history. We want Whedon.
That's right, because if you'll recall, that was the impetus. That game, the 30-0 Chiefs loss, was the impetus for spending all that money on Brock Osweiler in free agency. Yeah. And the kickoff return, it was the opening play. Nile Davis, 106 yards.
I remember this now.
And yeah. So Bill O'Brien has been the coach for 4 playoff games, and the Texans have averaged 12.5 points in those 4 games. That is not going to win you anything in the playoffs.
Man, Texans. Brian Hoyer pulled a Jameis in the first half. He had 4 first-half turnovers.
Oh, yeah, he did.
That playoff loss.
I'm telling you, they went out and got Brock Osweiler because of that. And worth noting, too. Oh, man. Let's see. So they gave up, what, 23 to the Buccaneers today? What did I say it was? 23? Yeah,
23-20.
21 to the Titans the week before, 38 to the Broncos, 22 to the Patriots when they beat them, that lowly Patriots offense, 17 to the Colts, 41 to the Ravens. That's since the bye. Josh Allen is going to light them up. I'm going to tell you right now, Josh Allen's going to have a monster game against this Texas defense that's not very good. Devin Singletary's going to run the ball over him. Josh Allen's going to chunk it deep twice to John Brown. Cole Beasley's going to chew him up underneath. And the Texans are going to be forced to throw when they get down early because Bill O'Brien runs on the first 2 possessions, goes 3 and out with Carlos Hyde 3 times. They're going to be forced to throw the entire game, and it's going to result in Deshaun Watson having a horrible stat line because this Bills secondary is very good.
The only silver lining in all this is that finally the Texans general manager will fire Bill O'Brien. Oh, wait a minute. Never mind.
Yeah, you can't do it. I feel like you're trying to fire me. Not going to happen. I don't know. Like, can you hear SNL loudly? It just popped onto my my office. Anyway, that's it for the show. Eddie Murphy back on SNL. Aren't you excited?
I mean, I'm DVRing it, and I can hear the sound in the background, and you're spoiling it for me, which is like Sean spoiling Star Wars. For instance, you got to just mute it, please.
I don't have my remote for it, so I can't get to it. So let's just wrap up the podcast and call it a day. All right, we'll be back on Sunday night with a recap of Sunday night's action. Hope you guys in.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.